This happened while the Israelites were wandering in the wilderness. And they had no one home, but they had three special leaders, siblings, Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. And when the Israelites were at Hazeroth, Miriam and Aaron started speaking against Moses because of the Cushite woman he had married, for he had indeed married a Cushite woman. And they said, "Has the Lord spoken only through Moses? Hasn't the Lord also spoken through us?" And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very humble, more so than anyone else on the face of the earth. Suddenly, the Lord spoke to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, and said, "Come out, you three, to the tent of meeting." So the three of them came out. And the Lord came down as a cloud and stood at the entrance of the tent and called Miriam and Aaron. And they came forward. And the Lord spoke. The Lord said, "Hear my words. When there are prophets among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to them in visions. I speak to them in dreams. Not so with my servant Moses. He is entrusted with all my house. I speak with him face to face, clearly, not in riddles. He has seen the form of God. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and the Lord departed. When the cloud had gone away from over the tent, Miriam had become leprous, as white as snow. And Aaron turned toward Miriam and saw that she was leprous. And Aaron said to Moses, "Oh, my Lord, do not punish us for a sin that we have so foolishly committed. Do not let her be as one who is still born, whose flesh is half consumed as it comes out of its mother's womb." And Moses cried to the Lord, "God, please heal her." But the Lord said to Moses, "If her father had but spit in her face, would she not bear the shame for 7 days? Let her be cast out of the camp for 7 days. And after that, she may be brought back in again." And so, Miriam was cast out of the camp for 7 days. And the people did not set out on the march until she had been brought back in again. After that, the people set out from Hazeroth and camped in the wilderness of Paran. This story in the book of Numbers gives me more questions than assurances. I've got lots of feelings about it, not so many clear lessons. When Moses is rescued from the water by Pharaoh's daughter, we know who Miriam is, and we know who God is. When the Israelites walk through the Red Sea and celebrate with singing, we recognize Miriam and we recognize God. Do you know this story in Numbers 12? In it, who is Miriam? Who is God? I wonder if you felt some of the same questions and feelings that this story gives me. So I'm going to try just putting out some of my thoughts for you to consider. My own questions and ones raised by a few commentators I've read through. And then I'm going to ask you what you felt as you heard this story, what you think as you mull it over. I'm hoping that in a few moments you'll share that with someone sitting near you, and maybe some of you will share some thoughts with all of us, but we'll get there in a minute. So my first question, I think, is it ready? Do I keep pressing it back? Awesome. First question, how did you feel when Miriam and Aaron criticized Moses? Miriam is identified as a significant leader of Israel. She is named as a prophet in Exodus when she leads the rescued people in singing. When God speaks through the prophet Micah, as we heard, he names all three siblings as Israel's leaders. For I brought you up from the land of Egypt and redeemed you from the house of slavery, and I sent before you Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. If you look in 1 Chronicles at the genealogy of Levi, who's one of Jacob's sons, it's 30 verses listing men and their sons and their sons and their sons and their sons, except for the verse that says the children of Amram, Aaron, Moses, and Miriam. Miriam gets counted. Miriam's leadership was important. Her voice mattered. She had a right to hold her brother accountable to his own leadership responsibilities. But is that the kind of conversation that we overhear? Is this just a typical family conflict? You think you're fighting about one thing, and then suddenly you realize you're still fighting about what you fought about 10 years ago? You've had those fights, maybe? The siblings know each other's buttons, or they're working out unfinished business. Mom's playing favorites again. First, we're led to believe that Miriam and Aaron take issue with a second wife that Moses married, or possibly how he's treating her. But then Miriam and Aaron move to sounding insecure about their own calls from God. Has the Lord spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken also through us? Don't we have a right to speak for God? Miriam is the people's prophet, and Aaron is the people's priest. The people needed them. Why would they suddenly be insecure and jealous about their brother's calling? My second question, how did you feel when God spoke? Who is this angry-sounding God? Is this God a parent who has had enough of children bickering? Come out to the tent of meeting right now, you three. I love you equally, but Moses needs to hear messages differently in order to carry them through. A parent knowing the gifting of each child? A parent who metes out discipline in the same way for the same wrong, even when we cry? It's not fair. A parent who metes out discipline differently for two different children, and we cry, it's not just. Who is this God who speaks sometimes in dreams, sometimes face to face, and sometimes in kindled anger? What if Moses really had gone off the path? Surely God has called us to speak to power when it is needed. My third question, how did you feel when Miriam was punished and ostracized? Her punishment is enshrined in law for all to see in Deuteronomy. It reads, "Guard against an outbreak of a leprous skin disease by being very careful. Remember what the Lord your God did to Miriam on your journey out of Egypt." Why was Miriam punished and not Aaron? Does his priestly role protect him from such awkward uncleanness because it would prevent him from caring for the Israelites? Or does the fact that he's a priest just mean that the storyteller's worldview doesn't allow that that could have happened, and so when it was written down, it didn't? The Women's Bible Commentary says that the lineage of Miriam is a lineage of generations of women who have been rejected or humiliated for doing exactly the same thing as their male counterparts. But, she writes, with hope and determination to find life in the scriptures, the larger biblical tradition presents us with another face of God, beyond the face of the one who puts Miriam out. That other is the face of God who stands close to and defends those on the outside. A God who has likewise been rejected, put outside, by people who thought they knew best. Was Miriam humbled or defiant when she was put out? Was she brought low? Or was she in fact brought to a healing of her jealousy? And a reminder of her gifts that her community so desperately needed. If Miriam's insecurity about her gifts separated her from her people, did her healing bring her back to a fuller confidence in God's calling on her life? The final question: how did you feel when Miriam was brought back into community? Phyllis Tribble identifies Miriam as a healer. As a child, she heals a potentially dangerous situation for her baby brother. As the Israelites come through the Red Sea, she leads with songs, drums, and dances, restoring life to sufferers, extending healing to all the people. In Numbers 12, Tribble suggests that Miriam endeavors to heal the community of a hierarchy of leadership that squelches and even denies the validity of other voices. Finally, she is remembered as one who was healed of dreadful skin disease. Again, we have a broken resolution, a promise unfulfilled. Miriam, prophet, wise and quick-thinking from her childhood, strong of voice and joyful in leadership. Even she can lose track of who she is, perhaps. Did the powerful gift that made her a leader cause her to stumble on the way? But still, she returns to community. And the wandering community stays put, as if waiting vigil for Miriam. They will not leave until she is back with them. They will not leave until Miriam's voice and Miriam's gifts return to lead them. I brought you up from the land of Egypt and redeemed you from the house of slavery, and I sent before you Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. So these are some of my thoughts, my feelings, and my questions, some things I've learned this week in reading. So if you could now turn to three or four people beside you, near you, just turn to a few people and discuss for a few minutes, maybe 7 minutes I'll give you, and think of those questions. You can, if you like order, you can go in order. If there's a question that really grabs you and jumps, just go for that one. How did you feel when you heard and saw this story? And after a few minutes of talking together, I'll see if anyone might be willing to share some thoughts or feelings. So turn to a few people and discuss. Can I call you back? The Hans read my mind. There's a microphone. Would anybody be willing to share some of your thoughts or feelings or wonderings about this story? Did I see a hand there? No? Or yeah. Here. Yeah, just raise a hand and Hans will bring you. I think right here Tim's willing to share.
One thing that we were wondering was, you know, the question of fairness between what happened to Miriam and what happened to Aaron. And I was doing a bit of, trying to do a bit of research on this, and the only rationale that I read was because Aaron was, what, was high priest, that the leprosy did not touch him also because, and I forget exactly why that was significant, but the question of fairness, what, how do we respond when what God does doesn't seem fair?
Yeah. Question. More questions or thoughts? Ideas?
Someone in our group said that she liked that it was helpful to think of it as a parent, God parenting them. And as a parent, I was sitting here thinking, yeah, it seems kind of rough, but then again, what if things had been let go? What if God didn't step in and they continued to be fighting and jealous of one another? What could that have led to? Because when God does step in, all of a sudden they go, you know, we don't really want to be separated from one another. We don't really want that. So that was a helpful metaphor for us.
The one thing is just how human that all feels, like the typical sibling rivalry. And I had to think, man, if I got a pimple every time I had expressed thoughts like that to my siblings, like I'd be totally covered.
So, we already had confession time, right?
Well, I'll pass the mic around. Well, yeah, no, it seems real. But I couldn't help just feeling really, maybe on behalf of so many about Miriam, a woman. It does seem to follow that narrative or that thought that that the treatment of women, you know, is so much harsher in so many respects. So that's something to try to reconcile.
Mm. Yeah, thanks.
Our group, one of the things we had a consensus about, I think, was that we weren't very familiar with this part of the Miriam story. Mm-hmm. You know, Miriam, we kind of lose track of after the dancing and the rescue and stuff. But I want to thank you for raising the questions, because as you were reading and doing your narrative, I thought, I don't get all of this. I don't, you know, it just raised all kinds of questions for me, as does most of the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this story is not in the lectionary, I can tell you that.
I also thought that the way you presented the Bible reading was very well done, and thank you for that. As far as Miriam being punished and Aaron not, it makes me think that Miriam was the strong person, the leader, and Aaron was easily influenced by others, and so therefore she deserved a stronger punishment.
There is a verb, yeah, there's a verb there where I think the English says they spoke against Moses, but it's actually a feminine singular, so, yeah.
We said in our group that actually God also does sort of have a time of punishment for all three of these people in the overall story. You know, Moses is not permitted to go into the Promised Land. Mm-hmm. So all of them have their own times where they have a failure. And yeah, I'd agree, Miriam is listed first too, which commentators sometimes say is an indication of who's sort of the leader. So, but anyway, I who is God in this story? This is one of the things I don't like about God. And I see it as God the football coach. I don't know if you've ever had a tough coach. Sometimes I'm a tough coach to myself. And it's where you try your hardest and either somebody else or yourself says, no, I can still do better than that. and you have to push yourself harder past the point of any kind of comfort. And that's what was happening to the children of Israel in the wilderness. And so in chapter 11, just before this story, you know, they're complaining to God about having no, you know, having boring food. And we should be sympathetic if you've only ever ate the same kind of food for days and days and days and days on end. Most of us don't even know what that's like. But anyway, so he sends quail, and so they just rush out and greedily gather it all. And so he strikes them with plague. And so I think this is, I see Miriam and Aaron as very legitimately questioning, is that really God doing that? Moses, are you sure you're hearing from God? Where'd this quail come from? We ate the quail and then it made some of us die. Are you sure? Because of our own, the Bible would say, hardness of heart, our inability to realize, wow, we should have paused and been grateful. We should have, you know, not just run around like a bunch of greedy children. Anyway, that's what I'm seeing as God, the football coach, who punishes, and then because of that punishment, there is rebellion. And so he has to correct again to get things headed in the right direction.
Thank you. Is there one more person who wants to share a thought? Well, thank you for completing the reading of that word. And I'm just going to close with a poem that I found by Darlene Moore Berg. And this poem is called Miriam, a postlude from Numbers 12. Absently, I worry flakes of skin, the patches of white marring my flesh. Jealousy, pride, I scratch the leprous price. Below me, in the distance, the camp awaits. All know my shame. Unclean. I wince in the direction of a pillar of fire, a desire to share my brother's glory, dies to a pale flicker, is consumed in that holy glow. 7 days, I become lessened in humility. I veil my tongue, I come to peace, a truce with God. I enter the Sabbath of my long life.